space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life, a new civilization, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Greetings, salutations, and welcome to Retrek. I'm Captain Jim. With me, of course, Sir Admiral Elliot.
Hi there, and welcome back.
And Dr. Squee.
Dragon! And no longer bearded dragon for the moment.
Oh.
This was getting silly.
We're back after a little break to talk about Star Trek Prodigy, which has dropped all of season two on Netflix in the UK and I believe worldwide as of the 1st of July. Yeah. So we were a bit worried at one point that we were never going to get to see this, but thankfully we have. And it's unique in that it's the first Star Trek show that has just dropped a whole season all at once.
No, I was just going to say on that note, just please, anyone who's watching this, if you like the first series, if you haven't watched the first series, watch the hell out of it and watch the second series straight away. That really, I mean, certainly the way that, Captain Janeway, Kate Mulgrew is, pimping out. She's going, it's like, look, we want to do more of this. Like, it sounds like it is open to doing more. So watch it, please, guys.
That's the plan, yeah. So we're all having sort of different viewing experiences of it because it's dropped. I imagine a lot of people have just done the whole thing all in one. I've been a little bit slower. It's been a busy week. So
yeah,
I've only really done the two episodes that we're talking about today. But what we will have is
16. I know. I binged like hell because I was just so excited, partly because I do want to have a huge impact on drop day. So you guys have to get, like, I know everyone wants to meet Rap because it's so good. We want more of it for longer, but please, everyone, watch every episode as quickly as possible. Then watch them two at a time as you're enjoying them with Retrek.
Exactly. And on that note, we will not give spoilers for anything that comes after the episodes that we're covering each week, or we will do our level best not to do that. If anything slips out, we do apologize. But certainly for this one, I watched a bit of episode three, but I had all sorts going on, so I wasn't able to concentrate. And I thought,
kudos to you guys. Like, I mean, honestly, this week at least, you're going to have an easier job because the amount of things I'll be going. But we won't talk about that because there's just so many cool, like, it again, I'm going to, it's totally spoiler free. It's amazing, but it's how much they keep on just like, there's a thing here. There's a thing, you know, there is, every episode has got a huge, wonderful thing to it. And it's just top quality Star Trek. Like, this is vastly becoming one of my favorite Star Treks. And I don't say that lightly. It's just so, I'm smiling out the joy of it. It's like, it's just pure joy and enjoyment. And it's like, even when they kind of slightly, not too much, but they slightly dumb down the science, maybe just, or explain it simply for a younger audience. I don't even mean dumbing it down. That was the wrong phrase. But even then, it just doesn't feel like I'm losing anything. It's just so well done. So I love this.
No, I agree completely.
That was something that was said about all last season, that even though this show markets itself as being a children's show, it is so watchable as an adult. Yet some of it is slightly reduced in what we normally get, but not massively. And it's still got very complex stories going on and relationships building.
It has. I think where it comes across sort of most strongly that it is aimed at a younger audience is that each episode is less dense. Like, I found, I take notes while I watch it for the podcast, and I found that my notes, my summaries were less for Prodigy. And I think that speaks to the fact that it's aimed at a younger audience. You want to put less things into each episode and
just
pace it out a little bit more.
These first two are like that, and they're more, I'd say they're closer to the first series, even though you've obviously got more characters because we open on Starfleet Command and, you know, Academy and everything. But as it goes forward, really, the complexity they do while still making it something which is easily accessible for young people. And I think that this, for me, does what I again, we said this last series, but it's like it's a family show. It does what the original series did of purely being open for everyone to watch with their kids, with their parents, obviously, yeah, whatever else. And I just love it for that. It just feels like, in that way, it's the most natural successor to the original series, because like Next Generation was fairly kind of family friendly and everything, but it's like, this feels like it's treading new ground, which Next Generation was sort of like, here's this now, like here's our views on that same, those same things kind of thing. It's the same adventure, but it just, it has that excitement and just like that young sense of adventure. And just the way they managed to do it so that I didn't know how they were going to get it, so that they were going to get just the crew we're following. But by the end of these two, you get where they're kind of going with that. And it's
you do. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the opening two-parter then is Into the Breach, parts one and two. And the first part starts with, I always love this when TV shows do this, where we've had a season break and we reintroduce the characters and we see time's moved on a little bit. This is where they all are now. So we kind of get this montage that jumps around and shows us where each of the characters are, and also reintroduces them and reminds you what you loved about them, gives us things that we can, if you'd never seen this before, you get little bits in each of these sequences that give you what that character's archetype is. So
you could jump into this quickly. As a new show just on Netflix. if you like, I know they have got season one now on Netflix, but if they'd only had season two and you never had Paramount Plus,
yeah,
could
that's
just dive straight into this in season two.
But don't rob yourself by doing that. Watch it all.
No,
watch
don't
all.
Rob yourself.
I know what you're saying.
I'm not saying to do that.
Oh, I know. Oh, no. I know exactly what you were saying. I'm just saying, just watch it all. I am such an advert for this show.
But that is something that's always been really good about a lot of the Star Trek shows, that you should be able to jump in and out of them where you want.
Yeah. This does have ongoing stories, so I think you could jump on at the start of the season, but
I would say also, like what you're saying about we see where they're all at now, kind of like some months later. It's basically the same as the opening to any second action movie, where it's like, okay, we need to call the Expendables back together, but where's Hawk at? And it goes to wherever. Yeah. Like, I would just pull the name Hawk at.
Yeah, exactly.
You know. And it's lovely.
They do it in like the most classic way, which is basically them all getting a phone call.
Yeah.
So you do see that in action movies. You'll have them doing, oh, I do this job now. Oh, wait a minute, the boss is ringing. Yeah. You know.
Wait a minute, what's that carrier pigeon coming towards me now with a note attached to it? It's like, it goes back for any genre as well. So yeah, in the past, you can have in the present, in the future here. It's just the message which pulls you all together. And it's just, I mean, it's lovely. And I like the fact that it's like, it does make sense that even though they aren't joining Starfleet, they are doing Starfleet training while they're waiting to join the Academy. That will make sense. It's only a little bit of a kind of like, the only thing which didn't quite square up totally, I think, is the fact that the end of last series, it sounded like they were going to go straight on a mission with Janeway, that they would just go and get the ship.
Yeah.
They've kind of fudged that a little bit, but I will excuse them that every day. Yeah. And it's like with, the progenitor, the progeny child.
Gwyn,
of course. Sorry, Gwyn. With her, like, it kind of works for her, though, because they sort of like implied that she's had months of training for First Contact. So
yeah,
it kind of works that she would be, like, she could have gone straight from that last scene we saw in the first series and gone straight to there.
Yeah, I think there was a deleted scene at the end of season one where Janeway sort of introduced the Voyager A, and then she went, psych, you're all off to the Academy.
Yeah. I forgot that one. Yeah.
Well, they're actually almost in pre-Academy art, because this is training to become a cadet.
Yeah, this is sort of getting you basic.
Which is very much what we saw Wesley Crusher doing in TNG. He was having to do exams to join the academy.
Yeah.
Yeah, whereas this is more, it feels like in this like little bit further in the future, they've got even better. They've got, it's like, not only will we give you essays to and stuff, we will have a pre-academy, like no one gets left behind. Like their education system, Jesus, if Star Trek was on the ballot for tomorrow, then they'd get my vote straight. Well, obviously I would anyway, but like their education plans are second to none. Like they've got a pre-academy.
Yeah. And Rock has worked out how to stop Tribbles multiplying. That's our little vignette where we get reintroduced to Rock. Now, I do have concerns about this. Has anybody asked the Tribbles if they want to stop multiplying?
Well, we did see the trouble with
Edwards.
What was his name? Edwards. And the Tribbles have been genetically manipulated already to reproduce, so...
They were never manipulated like that.
So it's it's undoing the genetic manipulation issue.
Oh, I never thought of that. That's good. And also it means that I wonder if the, I want to listen to the dialogue from that and then listen to the Edwards dialogue and see if she basically said what he said in reverse. Like, I bet they did something sneaky like that because, of course, they would. And I have so much faith in these writers to do sort of stuff like that. Sentient beings. I would say we probably did
a Tribble sentient beings.
Well, actually, no, because it's actually put forward that they're genetically manipulated so there can be a tasty meat snack.
Yeah. I mean, what are the things that they do in Measure of a Man? So awareness? Do Tribbles have an awareness?
No, I think they're just...
No, I mean, someone did a bomb in one of them. I mean, they certainly multiply, they reproduce. We know they do that.
I mean, like, Elliot's point really solves everything because, like, if it's our responsibility, or if it's Starfleet's responsibility that they were like that, it's, you know, them fixing it, it really isn't a bad thing. The only thing I would say is that also, considering at the moment our kind of control of kind of overpopulated animals, just slaughtering them in mass, sometimes even when they're, anyway, we won't go into that, but that's our current plan. Like, this is genetically, you know, it's a kind of safety hazard because they have taken over the world.
Well, the whole point was that they were genetically modified, weren't they, to reproduce like that. And it was to help on with food shortages.
I'm just throwing out here that also, even if that wasn't on the table, it's a health and safety thing, and I think that's a pretty tame way of just getting to reproduce a bit slower, maybe, you know.
It's probably partially to keep peace with the Klingons as well, because if the Tribble population gets too big, they might launch another holy war on them, so...
Well, I've never considered them sentient. I think that they're very do nothing... really, apart from meat and reproduce.
From their inception, they're kind of pitched as pets, which are kind of like, I think they've been sold on K7 was an allegory for, in America, they, I think, still sell dogs, like puppies in malls, like they've got shops. So I think it's kind of that level.
Yeah, but I wouldn't be happy with people genetically experimenting on dogs. Anyway, that opens up. We'll do the ethics of Tribbles.
To be fair, I think we already have massively genetic.
Well, yeah.
The fact that they're not wolves anymore.
It's a fair point. Anyway.
Willow doesn't know. She still thinks she's a wolf.
Janeway's summoned everybody, and they get met not by Janeway, but by the doctor.
I don't know if you noticed, but he's still referred to as the doctor. So he obviously hasn't taken from. When we see in Endgame the future, which this would be around that time.
It's not quite as far on. I looked this up. This is 5 years after Voyager gets back.
Right, but he obviously hasn't sort of decided on a name or anything because he's still the Doctor. He isn't Joe.
This is true.
I've kind of got a theory that whenever he's in the present, he's never going to get a name. I think it's always going to be something alluded to in a future time he gets.
Yeah, I think they're probably...
Okay, I'm going to be very careful because I don't want to give any spoilers away. But I don't think it doesn't feel like they're going to go that route with him in the present. And It'd be interesting to see how the kind of like dynamics of how he slots into the show, how much he's in the show, everything else. Which I think
I'm hoping he's off to be in it quite a lot because it's a nice. I'm hoping we get Janeway still all the way through, but Janeway is now the Admiral Janeway in the show. With she's not a hologram anymore, so she's a real life character. So it's nice to have that. We've lost the hologram, but we've got the real Janeway, but he's a hologram because we love hologram characters.
Yeah, I like that idea.
And I do sort of love that when they're talking to him and he's kind of pitching himself. It's like, hey, I'm going to be your new hologram. They're going, yeah, sure, that's going to be lovely, isn't it? And it's like, we don't care. You're not Janeway. You're not a real
Janeway. We like hologram Janeway.
I mean, I just think it's just, I love the fact that this is, whereas it's heart on its sleeve that it's, its own show, and it's definitely a new show and a new story, but it is also a soft sequel to Voyager at the same time. They do so much honor to Voyager, and that's just great. Oh, one thing I want to go on to before we go too much further, I love Jenkin Pog's new hair. I love Jenkin Pog trying to be like genteel and everything, and just his journey on that is just so much fun. It's just how much the other guys are really getting into it, and obviously it shows Dahl struggling with the academic side of it. Funny enough, they've had in the past with when they in Discovery tried to make Spock dyslexic, which really didn't work or go anywhere for my feelings. I think actually he'd be a really great character to be dyslexic because he does struggle with that book learning, but he's really smart. I think he'd be a much better allegory. I'd love if they did a sort of storyline that he struggled with all that stuff.
Well, that's maybe where they're gonna go. That's maybe where they're gonna go with it.
All sorts of stories about learning and how people learn and learning styles. That would be good stuff to put in the show.
Yeah. Well, and it's a more thin character that fits him better.
The fact that you've got five of them and they've gone to different categories and they're all learning, you've got that, and it's ideal for a younger audience where it's showing that how the different learning styles and you can fit into this. This person learns by this way, but this person's different and they learned that by doing it this way.
Yeah.
Instead, of saying that you have got to do 2 times 2 equals 4 and you will sit down with your book and you will write your times tables and you will write your alphabet because that does not work for everyone.
And if they really want to do a better choice in schools here and in a lot of the education systems, it'd be really great to do that, to have schools which specialize in learning of this type and specialize in learning of this type and fit towards more, right, this is the right school for this pupil particularly, not just, oh, we're a really great school, we're great for everyone. Like, no school can fit all those different. I think that's such a straightforward approach.
And so the first sort of twist, I suppose, is that they get assigned to the Voyager A, which we did see last season, but then Nova Squadron turn up. And so have I got my squadrons right? This isn't Red Squad. This is the one that Nick Locarno was part of.
Nick Locarno's back in the day. Nova Squadron, which I thought Nova Squadron had been disbanded.
I thought they had, and we know that Nick Locarno at this point, because Lower Decks is later on in the timeline by a few years.
I think I can solve it.
Nick Locarno's away building his secret evil Nova Squad to take over the galaxy.
You see, what I think has happened is Nova Squad's been disbanded. They became Red Squad, which then they had the stuff during the Dominion War and a ship going off. And like, there's probably a bit of scandal to get about that. So they probably rebranded back as Nova Squadron because the heat had gone off that. Now it's like, oh no, we're going to go back to the classic name. And everyone's forgotten how they disbanded. So they've got away with it.
I know, I'm happy with that. Quite happy with there being a Nova Squad and a Red Squad, you know.
Now Locarno, it just adds more to the Locarno storyline because that's why he wants to come back. It's like, those Nova Squadron dicks have taken my name.
That does work, actually.
Yeah, it's one of those, though, that you'd think that after what's happened with these sort of top-of-the-range squads and all that, that Starfleet might think, actually, maybe we shouldn't have these elite squads because these have got a track record of going off the rails and doing
elite
shit
squads.
That they shouldn't be
doing. Elite squads are not a good idea, and linking all of your ships together are not a good idea. If Starfleet had to troubleshoot, they would probably be the two things Starfleet Academy should look at most closely, I think.
Can I just read one of the comments from Jody, just because I think this is so harsh on the Tribbles. I think they're more like pests, like rats. I mean, they breed like pests, but they were always kind of like more like akin to cute little
Tribbles. Yeah, I mean, I would rather have a Tribble than a rat.
I think you could probably say that the app could be like a rodent. And let's be fair, I do know people who love having pet rats. So
yeah.
I know, but on press-wise, and I don't
and
know
they do
how
feel quite
that.
Nice to the rats, actually, to stroke. They've got that nice fur.
I would just say reputationally, I don't know how, no, maybe Jody did mean it more like that, but a lot of people see rats as vermin. I'd say more like the reputation that guinea pigs have seems like what they were going for more with the
guinea pigs are more fluffier.
Yeah, they just do nothing. And
seen by most as cute, as opposed to rats, which a lot of people have problems with. Not me personally.
So,
rat viewers, sorry.
Then we get Dal doesn't like being assigned to study, and this sort of... Because I suppose the thing is, we kind of closed out the character arcs with them last season. We got Dal to a point where he's comfortable being the leader and the hero and everything. And so we don't necessarily walk that back, but we give him something new to struggle with, which is that because he's experienced that now, he's struggling to fit in a what he sees as kind of a reduced role now.
Yeah.
And he says himself that he's struggling with not being the hero kind of thing.
Which you can see because he's just spent a year commanding a starship and making the calls and going on the missions, and now suddenly he's told, yeah, thanks for saving us all. Now here's some
homework
pads for you to
That's it. It's sort of a bit of a come down, really, that he attained this height, and he says later, like, we used to have our own ship and we could go anywhere, and
this is why it fits for me that it's kind of like, I feel like the others all have their areas of expertise, which they just want to get more expert in. They're fascinated by this.
Mm.
I love, like, it's sort of, it was a nice pairing of having Zero with the Doctor, so they could relate on a level. And he usually projects the more grown up of them, which is why it was so much fun where he had the message from Jane, where he just went, yippee! It was like, that was a lovely moment. But I kind of love the fact that that he's more like it. But anyway, they're all kind of like learning their stations, where it's like for Dal, this kind of supports for me the kind of idea that maybe he's got learning difficulties, because he loves doing it. He's got a natural kind of predilection to doing all this stuff. But when it comes to sitting down, reading and learning, he gets too distracted and stuff. And it's like, I thought it was really nice. And it just, like, how does one face having the biggest adventure, being the captain of a starship and then going back to school? Like, of course that's going to be jarring.
Yeah, and it's an interesting way to position the character to let us.
If you look at all the others, they're all actually physically doing what they were doing anyway, still, they're not just being given a load of pads to read. Like, you've got, and they are, you've got, I can't remember all the names. Jenkum is there in engineering and he's around the warp core. You've got Murphy sent off, there's 23 holodecks that he can do his security training. You've got one's gone off to medical and he's actually doing medical stuff. And
that's it. There's nothing practical for Dal to do. And that's where he excels, is in the practical.
Well, and it's kind of, it's funny because all those other areas, as much, there's so much to learn, there is so much practical learning. Whereas being a captain, when you're in that moment, there's probably less kind of practical stuff you're doing at the moment, other than you're marshalling people more.
Yeah.
Whereas all that involves learning everything about kind of like all the, not all the different, not only all the different protocols, but you've got to understand a little bit of every subject as well. So the book learning is just going to be horrific. Yeah,
definitely. And then the story sort of kicks off really when we find the Doctor being a bit sneaky with this reference to Shuttle Bay 3. Now, and it's like, wait a minute.
Has the Doctor deliberately done this?
I wondered that.
One of the things, because I thought when he goes, oh, I've got a glitch where I've said it, he's like, no, now, has we, like, as the episode goes on, there's Janeway denying to that alien entity that we see come up that they've got a ship and all that. And I wonder, she's put them in a position, knowing what Dal's like, that they will take the ship and go through when they're...
Oh, you see, I slightly nuanced, but kind of the same area. So basically, the Doctor, I just think, is a blowhard. He is the one who will accidentally say something. It's just like a flaw in his program because of the original ego, which he's based on.
Yeah.
But with things like Janeway, it's like, yeah, I mean, like, why else would she call them onto the ship? I don't think she intended them to go off in the way they did. I think it was so that if the mission got scuppered and they need to cause more liability... And maybe, yeah, get them going off, probably with some adults was the idea, and she covers that they're still there.
Like, if you look at it, and it plays to they've gone early, because, like, I'm jumping forward, but they discover the ship and something's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then Janeway discovers that they discovered about the ship, so she calls them and talks to them and explains it, and they're going to hold back. And then they're just chatting, and Nova Squad overhears them. And suddenly they've got to race down there to hide it.
Yeah.
And the launch early. And it's almost like, yeah, has Janeway put them in that position to discover it so she can control them? That when Starfleet say, no, you can't go ahead with the mission.
Perhaps.
That she's just going to let them do it.
I wouldn't go that far that she would purposefully have them discovered by accident. For my mind,
she would. She has
no. You've done your theory. Let me have my theory, and then we'll discuss further.
We will.
Okay. No, calm down. I'm not saying your theory was bullshit or anything. It was good. I think her plan was to have them there because, like, it didn't, otherwise, it makes no sense for her to call them out there when the mission is going. We agree on that. Like, there's no reason for her to call them out that moment, which is the worst possible moment when she's going to be too busy for them. For my mind, I thought it was more kind of the case of that she wanted to sort of like get the mission ready, hopefully do it without too much involvement from them, but she got them as her ace in the hole. If the mission gets cancelled, to send them with some adults to go and do it while she, makes like they're still there and they're obeying orders.
No, Janeway has a history of abuse to younger members of the crew.
Okay.
Oh, come on, he was an adult, though, in all fairness. I'm just saying.
He was an ensign when he joined, straight out of the academy.
Yeah, he was at least in his 20s.
But she kept him as an ensign so she could bully him for 7 years.
So is this what's going to happen to Dal? He's never going to be promoted.
He's a cadet
ever.
He's a cadet now. He's under Janeway's wing.
You see, again, I'm going to go against you because I think she genuinely... they were family friends, so maybe she was very protective of Kim, but I think it was personal against him. I think she likes Dal, and so he's going to get promotions and stuff, but yeah.
So,
for some reason, like Kim on the first day made her a bad coffee or something. So she's like, fuck you, you are never getting above
it. That's it. They brought her a cup of tea when she said, get me a cuppa.
I could send him off the ship, but that would be too kind for this insult.
We're spilling over into the second episode then, now that they've discovered the Infinity. And this is where we take a bit of a break and we go back to Gwyn, who's off doing her own story.
Can we just cover, there's one important plot point you missed.
Oh, sorry.
Obviously, Murph's drool, which I think we have to cover. Not only do I love it when Jenkin Pog, all I can think of when he starts going is like, oh my God, there's a secret ship. Look at all the cool stuff. And like, I'm thinking, shut the fuck up. And then you get
a bit loud.
Saying, it's like, are we trying to get caught? And then there's the drool string from Murph. Although, I've got to say, like, again, it's one of the things where I kind of, like, I was almost kind of getting fixated on them going, no, it's a fun family show, let it go. But it was like when the drawstring dropped, not only would I look at it and go, that's the same colour as Murph, that's a coincidence. Like, what is from here that looks exactly like his drawl? And secondly, he looks down that and goes, oh, I must get someone to repair it. He doesn't go, He doesn't look up. Looks up.
This is another reason why I think it's almost being manipulated into discovering the ship and all
that.
Well,
you think he's in on it? I don't think that.
I honestly think Janeway's
are in a circle.
They're in a circle, all in on it.
Wow, okay.
I did like, it doesn't quite work, but of that inner circle, you've got Janeway, who's a human, you've got an Andorian, and you've got a Tellarite. So if they'd have had a Vulcan, they would have had all the founding members of the Federation. And I just wish they'd stuck a Vulcan in there just to have that little nod. Because when I was realizing, I was like, oh, I see what they've done. And then,
And who's the new member of the Prodigy team?
Well, the new member of the Prodigy team is a Vulcan, because that's the rules for animated Star Trek. You have to add a Vulcan member of the main cast.
This is what I do. I love the fact they have kept it them. You can see how they're going to keep it that tight knit group. But check a new character. Yeah, that's fun. Yeah, and I think you're working well with the rest of them.
Yeah. And then, so on to Gwyn then at the start of episode two. So she's got to her home world before it has the big civil war and everything. And it doesn't go too well. It gets a bit dicey and she has to do a big dramatic escape, which is pretty cool. Well,
can we talk about the strategy here? Because I get that they want her to be the ambassador to them, but no message head, nothing like, or no, like, and they beam her right into the middle of the population.
Yeah.
It's a very weird way of doing it, I've got to say.
Yeah, it's a very weird way of doing the first contact of a species that, you know, had a major civil war due to a bad first contact. First contact, so that goes wrong. And they've set out due to this first contact, and it's all timey-wimey, which we know as well, to destroy the Federation because they've been found to be the root cause of the...
They don't keep track if they're going to send her down on the fact that has anyone else gone there yet? Like, there was this other person who was out there who, you know, could pour some poison in the well. And she's also been trained for...
Sorry, go on.
I was just going to add, she's also, what I've had got from that first little bit was that she'd been extensively trained on first contact. They even make a Picard, they make two Picard kind of references in here, which are very fun. But they go, it's like, oh, you know, first contact protocols better than Admiral Picard. I love it when they do that. I will always
do
that. But yeah, so it shows that she's done all this. And when she's there, I know there's a few basic things I would have thought she would pull out of her bag if she knew all that. But again, I want to. It's a family show. You don't want to get too bogged down in all that, but a little bit. It's a weird way of handling first contact for sure, though.
So is the plan that we send Gwyn and she will do a better first contact so they won't have the civil war?
I think it's the idea she will be a better ambassador. She can even explain in time what happened, I think, is the idea.
Yeah.
But if the Federation go in because they know they caused the war, there's that risk that it might go down the same way.
But if we make the first contact better, we're going to mess up what happens in the future, which means the protostar doesn't...
They had that moment in the episode.
Haven't you read Temporal Dynamics?
Well, the problem is I have, and we're changing how we do time travel in Star Trek.
Like, really?
Star Trek was always that there was one unified timeline, and if you went back and changed something, it created an alternate timeline unless you then put it back to normal. Whereas we now seem to be doing the Avengers Endgame style, which is it creates all these multiple universes. And one of the big plot points that is coming up that's going to be discussed is, well, we can't go forward through the wormhole until Chakotay's left because it'll knacker the timeline. But we're already going to be knackering that timeline if we fix the first contact anyway. So that what we're doing in the present will stop that timeline in the future.
Okay. I'm sorry, I've got a way in here. Right. They do cover in the episode. So, again, it's another pared down explanation because it is a kid/family show. So it's like,
well, missed it. So enlighten me.
Oh, she says to on the link to Dull, she says, well, that because he goes, oh, explain to me like I'm a Dull. And she goes, that thing which happened, like with the future, happened to us in our past. And I'm trying to create a new future. A very, very pared down. Now, they should know the way to explain different realities. We've all watched Back to the Future 2. You get a chalkboard and you do two lines. That's the way you
explain that. Yeah, but I've just done that on my tissue box now and it don't work.
Well, I would like to review your tissue box at a later date where we can fully go through it. But what I would say is there is some stuff, and again, no, I'm not going to go into spoilers, but there is some. They talk about time travel. I don't think that's a spoiler because they're already talking about it. But some of the stuff they bring up is really interesting. That's all.
Right. I will put a pin in that for now then. But it seems that we've got two approaches to time travel within the setup of this episode, and that those two approaches seem to contradict each other. But I will let it play out. And
I'm not saying what happens later explains it or doesn't, but it's
also
just, there is more stuff.
I will accept that I'm probably very stupid. So.
You're right. They have a different explanation per 5 minutes of Star Trek for time
travel.
We
did do a lot of different time travels, and there's lots of different ways time travel work. And the whole J.J. Abrams Star Trek universe is a different timeline because a different thing happened.
That's the big exception to it, because it doesn't get fixed in that, whereas it has always.
And let's be fair, Star Trek 2009 was before J.J. Abrams.
And we've also got episodes like...
Before Avengers Endgame, Multiverse.
True. We've also got episodes like Parallels, where they do go into different realities. So different realities isn't new to Star Trek. They've already established they're out there.
No, it's not. I'm just saying that within the context of just these episodes specifically,
right,
they're presenting two different theories on what you can and can't do travel.
No, what they're saying is Chakotay's crashed in the future, gone through a wormhole, and crashed 52 years in the future.
Yes.
He needs to send the Prodigy back in time.
Yes.
So that all them events happen in the past with Gwen and Dal and all that, so they can get to where they are now.
Yes.
So Gwen can now go in the present time to put a second reality for the future where you don't have a civil war, where Chakotay doesn't need to send the Prodigy back. But because he set the Prodigy back, Gwen will survive to be able to set the future.
But if we accept that each decision is creating a separate reality, it doesn't matter whether you go back before Chakotay sets off.
I think it does, because I'm just going to add to this. You've got the wormhole, which is currently open, which, as we've had with, compare it to? There's other, the temporal wake in First Contact, the movie. They've got, while that's still open, they're still able to go to that timeline before the wake closes. I'm going to guess the wormhole would work in a similar way, that as long as that's open, that goes from their present to that particular future.
Okay.
And maybe when that closes, there's something different, but at the moment, that is specifically a corridor to that time. So if they change something in the moment in the present, they can still get to that future.
Right.
So rescue to go, get back, and everything's copacetic. If something else happens, that's out the window.
Chakotay's in future A. We'll call it future A.
Yes.
There is a wormhole in the present, which we will call X.
Yeah. Yep.
So X leads to A, which is future
With the wormhole.
With the wormhole. Yeah. So and X Gwen, plus
And
wormhole
at the moment, the rest of the future
hang
around
on,
here is
hang
also
on,
in
I'm
think.
Formulating it.
No, I'm just adding to that. At the moment... Yeah. Future A is at sync with the rest of the future. Like, if you traveled another way, at the moment you travel to the same
right
point.
So some changes. X plus wormhole equals A.
Yeah,
but what we are currently doing in X is creating future B.
Yes.
Yeah,
which is independent of future A.
Yeah,
but because the wormhole connects the present to future A, we can still go there.
Yes,
what
we're doing is for Gwen to still exist. We are relying on the Prodigy coming back from future A,
right,
to be able to preserve certain things from future A in the timeline that created on future B.
So, yeah, therefore,
so if you go to the past, it's already happened, so you can still go to any point in the past from there.
So therefore, we have to accept that creating future A, creating future B, does not completely wipe out future A.
No.
Future A still has to exist. Yes.
Yeah. So if you're outside that wormhole and you change the time, then if you go outside that wormhole to travel to the future, you are now going to future B, because that's whereas if you go through the wormhole, you're going to A, because it's connecting those two points.
But no, the wormhole can't be the only thing that connects the two points, because the prodigy wouldn't be able to come back, because it wouldn't exist. It would will always have to exist in a separate dimension now.
At the moment, the wormhole is connecting X to A.
Yeah.
Like that. Yes. At the moment, we'd be going on a straight path X to A, normal continuity. Yep. But what we're trying to do is maintain X to A path.
Yeah.
And a new path B.
Yeah.
And stop path A on that line.
Yeah.
So it'll only exist on that line.
That's what I'm saying, though, is it does have to create two branching timelines that exist independently of each other. Otherwise... Yes.
I agree. So there's different realities, and I think this is branching the realities off. And if you didn't have the wormhole, every future, if you travel from our present to the future, you couldn't get to Jakote, because that's different. But the wormhole is keeping you connected to that specific reality. So any change you happen around it will not affect that, in the same way the temporal wake did not affect the Enterprise.
Okay, I'm happy with that now. I've got it written down. I'm going to go with that next time. Right, so back to Gwyn then. She meets her dad, so we get John Noble back, which is good.
Oh, and joyful John Noble. He's fun. Yes. John Noble. It's great. I love it. And I love the fact that she isn't telling him everything, but she seems to be being pretty earnest. And again, I'm talking as if I haven't seen the rest of the episode. So this is my thoughts as I watched it, was I really hope she's just honest and straightforward with him. Because I like, there's always that thing of like, they lie and then the person finds out they're lying and that makes them evil because they were lied to. And it's like, I really want to just be like, maybe not tell him all it straight away. That's fair enough. But I want her to be honest with him, because that's because we usually go down the other line. So
yeah, you don't want it to create artificial drama
She says to him creates what makes him the evil person.
Yeah, I don't like
so that. So we don't want him in a causality loop.
No, and also it's just that whole thing of like, they always do that. Like whenever there's something which they're keeping from them, that then leads to that happening.
Yeah.
It's like, it's just been done so many times, whereas they haven't done of just like, Luke, just tell them the truth and see what they make of it. Like, give them the chance to be something better. You know, it's like, trust in them that they're not innately, like, they've already shown that he's not innately bad. He does have some wonderful qualities. He was just twisted by what happened to his world, and he hasn't got that burden. So why does he have to, like, he doesn't have to be that guy. So it's, I want it to go that way.
Yeah, I do too. And back on the Voyager then, so we get Dal gets rumbled, but he has this bit where he sort of goes, well, what about Shuttle Bay 3 then? This does make me wonder as to Elliot's theory. Like, Janeway must have known that he'd come out with something like that if he knew about it. So, yeah, the question is, did she want him to know?
And it's the way that if these were just like young cadets, well, not even cadets, pre-cadets, which is what they are, and they've done something like that, would she really call them to the observation lounge and bring them into the plan and the mission? Or would she, you lot are restricted to security, we'll be under reprimand when we get back to Starfleet?
All I'm going to throw in there is
she's quite fast and loose with a lot of
them. She is, exactly.
I'm just going to say, I love the fact that none of us, like, we're just arguing or discussing over degrees of which Janeway's manipulating the situation. No one's going, Janeway's just being honest and straightforward. None of them even, that didn't even enter the conversation.
No, we've...
Again, the message at the beginning doesn't make any sense. There's no reason for her to call him on.
Yeah.
No, we've had seven years to get to know Janeway.
And I'd argue probably a lot more than that because I have watched the hell out of Voyager a lot of times because I do love that series.
Yeah, yeah.
Speaking of Voyager, then, they find the footage of Chakotay, and Rock does a brilliant sort of gasp when that's revealed, like, which I thought was really good fun.
By the way, you mentioned Voyager. Have we actually talked about the new ship, really? Because it's like, I love the fact that it goes to the classic look of your Voyager, and it brings all the best kind of elements of the new ships they're playing with. It looks more real than the
original. It's got elements.
The original always looked a bit too pretty and a bit too rounded and everything. This just looks it damn right, to be honest with you. It's, yeah.
It looks good.
Yeah, it's a pretty ship. Just one.
Yeah, I like it.
I did notice it go to warp to see if it's the cells move.
I believe
it looks like more. I thought it looked like more traditional nacelles, but
we've supposedly done away with needing to do that. Voyager was an experimental ship,
but didn't the protostar's nacelles move?
No, that was
there. That got an extra nacelle.
That
had a transforming back end to a nacelle.
Exactly.
So I think it used proto drive.
It is a rather nice, pretty effect when something moves as it's going to. It's a nice little added feature. I think it's in the original. I think the nacelles moved, then it moved. I think they move as it's moving. I might be wrong on that.
Which is why we wanted a toy of the protostar, but we never got it because Paramount hated Prodigy for reasons best known to themselves.
Well, there is
Netflix can make out there a toy.
Somewhere. There's a protostar out there with Chakotay somewhere. Maybe
they can make us a toy. Netflix, come on, get on it.
And I think someone's going to do the Eagle Moss, or someone's going to do the Enterprise A. Oh, sorry, Voyager A. Even sorry.
I'll tell you what, it's called Fan Home now. Fan Home is who bought the rights to the Eagle Moss model ships when they went bankrupt.
When they started making them at different sizes for no good reason.
And I will retract this completely if they decide to sponsor the podcast and send us a free subscription each.
We will.
However, for now, they can jog on with what they want to charge for the new ones. And what they've done, which is really naughty, is the first one they're releasing is from Picard, and it's the Titan A. But it's like, you're going to re-release that with the Enterprise G registry on it, aren't you? And you're going to try and make people pay for it again just when it says Enterprise on it. Whereas you could have released it as the Enterprise G first time round and no one would have lost any sleep over it.
Oh, I'm going
to say know that ain't going to happen. And to be fair to Fan Home, I do know that the model kits are available 3D printed and resin, etc., for the Enterprise G and the Titan A. And I know people who have bought two copies of it.
No, so I'm sure they have.
And built both and painted both so they can have a Titan A and an Enterprise G because it's Star Trek ship. So you've got.
However, I will not be subscribing to the new collection for. I forget exactly what the price is, but for what they want for it, for the size of it, I got nearly the entirety of that original collection and they were good value when they were a tenner, but when they started creeping up, the scale sort of went the other way.
Let me also change our mind. I was going to say, look, you made some excellent points. I think the first one you made, though, was really gets the crux of the matter. Our opinions are open to being bought. So if you want to sell them some free shit, we love it. It's a reasonable price. But at the moment, it's bullshit. It's overcharged. That could all change. It's all I'm saying to you.
Absolutely. We will.
Until I have sponsorship, I can say what I want. I will absolutely love them when I'm sponsored.
Yeah. If they want to send it, we will display it on every single episode. But for now.
So what's that, King? You want me to change my mind? Fair enough, Your Majesty.
Absolutely. Like, yeah,
that's all it would take. It would just, yeah. You would have a little conversation.
Didn't say, just nice little parcel turns up. Here's your Titan A. You don't have to worry. We're sending you an Enterprise G as well. So, not a problem. It's an easy fix, Fan Home, if you're listening. Yeah.
Just trying to solve problems for you.
Yeah, I think we've probably killed another sponsorship deal.
Oh, no, I'm just going to take a sip of my brother's puffy apple cider myself.
I do love a can of Coors while I'm broadcasting.
I prefer Pepsi Max because it's the choice for a new generation.
Oh, that's not. You're not allowed to drink Pepsi. I told you about this at the weekend.
I mean, brother's toffee apple cider, and it isn't Halloween. Don't mind if I do.
Well, I'm just really upset by this conversation, so I'm just going to get out my Kleenex and wipe my tears away.
Well, I'm just feeling very spry for this conversation because I've taken my Aldi own brand Energize Effervescence Tablets Tropical Flavour and it turns my pee a wonderful yellow.
Let me just take a note of what that's called using this wonderful Bic. Anyway, enough of that. So the point I was going to make before we got sidetracked with sponsorship is that, as anyone who listens regularly knows, Chakotay is not my favorite character.
You love him, don't you?
To be fair, with what he came out with last year, how he was, and there was a massive backlash against him personally as an actor, I'm surprised they've taken the time to bring him back for this season.
It was already shot by then, though. Remember?
It was already shot.
Because
yeah,
we talked about this at the time, the fact they'd held it for so long. And I was actually worried it was going to be a sort of like Ezra Miller and The Flash, that it would get so put back or it wasn't picked up by someone because he's toxic. And also, Jesus Christ, like, we're living in 2024. And this is a, I think of Mexican heritage. He's from California originally, Rob Beltran. His advisor on the original series, lest we forget, was a Jewish person. And it's like nothing works for Native American with this. And we've still got, like, there seems to be something with legacy characters where they do something.
Yeah, you can't walk it back now.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Maybe the day is coming where we don't. I don't know what the future looks like.
Maybe. I mean, the choice would have been just don't put Chakotay in it if you want to avoid.
It seems like a good idea. I mean, you could put back anyone else.
That would be one of my general rules is just don't put Chakotay in things.
Let's be fair, the first version of When Trek Goes Wrong that we did, and when the Jewish lady stood up and apologised for him.
I love that. It was the time of it as well. We were just generally going, it's like, and it was his advisor, a Jewish guy, and she goes like, I'm Jewish, sorry. It's like,
and I would like to apologise on behalf of that, my entire...
it's like, that wasn't our point. Please don't make it sound like we meant that, but like, you're lovely, but just don't make us sound like we meant that. No, she was great. It is such a weird choice. You've got an actor which we found out later was toxic, but I don't know if there was anything before that. And there's a character which has got some issues, let's just say that. And you have all the other characters to choose from. I don't know. It's an interesting choice.
They obviously want to do the Chakotay-Janeway relationship. They're going to do something with that relationship, whether they're going to sort of rekindle the possible romance that was there, or
I don't know. A monkey that will have something to say about that.
The monkey may get involved. You never know.
And then Paris comes in with the lizard children after all these years. Could be a mess.
So yeah, I will overlook it, because I'm really enjoying Prodigy, but anyone but Chakotay, I don't care. Leave him in the future. Just, he's lost a ship. Sod him. I just don't like the man.
He actually makes a promise in this episode that I want him held to, that he's not coming back from this mission.
That would be good. Anyway, that's my biggest issue.
You've gone into a Ferengi print. You promised that. You promised that. Now
it's really testing.
Look back. So we've got to euthanize you right now. I'm sorry.
It's testing my love of Star Trek as a concept, because like you want to structure a whole 20 episode season around the one character out of all Star Trek that I dislike the most. And you know, it like, can you imagine, we went to see the reissue of Star Trek 3, The Search for Spock. I'm down with that. Let's search for Spock. I hope you find him. The search for Chakotay.
Like, you know the best part about the search, when we went to see The Search for Spock, it ended on a cliffhanger that lets us hope that there's going to be a sequel.
It does.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sequel.
I think they're going to make another one after Search for Spock. Though.
I think they'll go a bit left field with it. I think they might get all eco-friendly and maybe do something about saving the whales. We'll find out.
That's why we have Cetaceous Ops.
It is, and I'm glad we get to see that. It feels like almost becoming a running joke now that we only get to see it in animation.
I was thinking about this because it's definitely a whale this time that we see.
It's a whale, yeah.
And I was thinking, like, hold on, these were discovered as being really intelligent species in Star Trek 4.
Yeah, true.
And then suddenly we have Cetaceous Ops by the time we get to Picard's era in much bigger starships. And they've obviously realised, and yeah, this is a good idea, having these
the
guys
whales
on board.
Have helped them, yeah.
There's nothing I can say.
That whale must either be one of either George or Gracie or one of their immediate descendants, because we know that they were the only whales.
And they brought back two of them, so they're basically encouraging interspecies, inbreeding.
I don't think whales care too much.
No, I don't think.
I don't know. By this stage, they're super intelligent, probably. I don't know.
No,
they're always super intelligent.
Mm.
We're talking to them. Edward a little bit genetically modified them so they could breed more.
There you go, yeah, genetically modified.
Actually, maybe if you came to the future, they can genetically breed some along with the natural population.
Yeah, let's have one where they have to save the dodo. Anyway, so all of this culminates in the classic Prodigy crew, minus Rock, who's too much of a goody two shoes, and minus Gwyn, who's having her own adventure. But they all end up on this experimental shoal through the wormhole. And
Nova Squad.
And a member of Nova Squad. And like you saw hinted, Squee, earlier on, like, I really enjoyed this because it's like two episodes and it's got us back to the dynamic, albeit it's a little bit different.
Not quite the dynamic, but we're very close to it.
Yeah, we found a way of getting these characters on a mission together, and I like that. I like that in a comfortable space with that.
Again, I don't, this is spoilers in any way, but it's like, they just do such a canny job of keeping it basically that mini crew, but expanding out the world as well. It's just, it's so nicely done. They are... what are the guys who wrote this? It was like a couple of guys, isn't it? Like certainly two people with the same surname. But anyway, those guys, I've got to hand them how tightly they've scripted this, how tightly it's done. Much the same as Lower Decks, same thing. It's kind of like all the episodes are so tightly wound with so many things going on, but it never feels over busy. And they just know the tone to get. I mean, the only thing which I did think when I saw the new uniforms from the Academy is like... one series in, and you're trying to get people to buy another cosplay already. I mean, geez, all right.
Of course,
yeah. I'm not being funny. This is Star Trek. At what point are you actually surprised at that now?
it's the rate. It's like with Doctor Who. There were different console rooms or different versions of the console rooms over the years. However, now it's like every other series, you get a new console room. Every other series, or every series in this case, you get a new uniform. That's dialed up quite a bit. Like in the original series, it's all the way through. Next Generation all the way through. And then the other ones, they changed a bit.
Yeah, Strange New Worlds has managed it, haven't it? As well.
Strange New Worlds has been the same so far.
It hasn't, because they did the future one and they had the version of the movies, but the Strange New World version of the movie uniforms.
True. Oh yeah, there's not one in.
So they managed to get a second uniform.
I'll even give them guest uniforms, like which crop up, fine. That happens throughout the course of a series. If you want to do time travel, fine. And maybe having little tweaks on it. It's ostensibly the movie ones, a little bit of a different cut. Fine, don't mind that. But it's, yeah, this is a new main uniform already. Yeah. It's like,
right, I used okay. to love when I had
and to be fair, we only got the actual uniforms towards the end of season one.
We didn't. Yeah, and I suppose Next Generation did change it subtly, because Next Generation was a one piece. Sorry, they weren't the same.
Yeah, TNG. That had to be done, didn't it?
Because of the back problems. Yeah. And then they recut it, though. They got rid of the braid as well.
Yeah.
So if it was three piece to one piece, I'd say that's basically the same uniform. But like, yeah, we're removing the braid. It was just enough to sell another uniform as well.
They added a collar in season three and various things. I used to love in the Star Trek encyclopedia where it'd have a page that just showed you all the different uniforms
over the years. And now it's a separate edition.
I'm going to say it'd have to be now, wouldn't it? Because the latest edition of the Star Trek encyclopedia covered up to Star Trek Into Darkness, so everything from Discovery onwards is not in the physical book.
The uniform book is now in three editions.
Yeah, it's on Memory Alpha, obviously, but it's not in the physical copy. So I think we're about due for a new edition of that.
Get through six uniforms, didn't he? In fact, in the 50 episodes,
a lot. Anyway,
it might be more than 50 episodes, but
anything else on the main ones and one which never really happened, and then other ones featured.
Anything else on these two episodes then before we wrap up?
Just bloody good Star Trek.
Just really, really enjoyable Star Trek again. It's not just really well done Star Trek, it's also a beautifully animated show to watch. It's not just good writing, it looks nice to watch it. And that makes a difference.
Do you know what? If anything, I think they the thing they probably do least good, which is still okay, is when they've got humans. Mainly male humans, I've noticed, looked a bit more wooden somehow. Janeway's got loads of animation to her, whereas the male characters are a bit more like that. That I would like a little tweak on if they're getting feedback. But I fucking love the animation. I think it looks great. There's some bits which look photorealistic, which they bounce in, fantastical, and it just always looks so sweet. And I would add just quickly in one of the earlier scenes, Zero at the beginning when he's on the park bench watching that young couple. It's kind of nice, but a little bit creepy. I was waiting for one to look at him and go, what the fuck's Medusa doing eyeing us up while we're trying to snog here?
The scene I like at the beginning is when you've got Dal and he's watching all the ships going over him and he looks up and he goes, I went faster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll leave it there for this week. Then next week we'll be back with the next two episodes.
Episode 3 and episode 4 for those who can count.
In the meantime,
you're going to bust out the names. I was going to be impressed then.
They are actually listed on Netflix as just episode 1, episode 2, episode 3.
You have to actually watch them to pick up what the names are.
Yeah. In the meantime, you can get in touch with us. We're at RetrekPod. We're RetrekPod@gmail.com. We're on all the socials, including Retrek Model Studios on YouTube.
I'm still working on the Gundam. Not sure if I'll get a video out this week. I might try, because we have a side project on tomorrow.
Tell us about the Dr. Squeeze show first, and then we'll talk about the special.
Okay, just quickly, because hopefully I'll get out an episode this week. Basically, I've got two episodes waiting to go out. One is an interview I did years ago with William Russell, who recently passed away from Doctor Who. The other one is with Sarah Pimborough, the best-selling author who wrote Insomnia, which is now on Paramount Plus as an adaptation, and Behind Her Eyes, which is on Netflix. Both excellent. Please do check out all the books. I'll hopefully get at least one of them out this week, but tomorrow I'll be going to be working on the polls all day, so I won't get a chance. So it'll be a late one, if any. If not, they'll come sometime next week. I'll at least try and get out the small interview with William Russell, because I should be able to get that up on Friday.
Which leads us nicely into what we're doing tomorrow. So, for anyone listening back on the podcast feed, it is election day in the UK. And perhaps it's fate that that day fell on the 4th of July, and once again, we'll be fighting for our freedom, not from tyranny or oppression.
Don't do that. That's what Farage bloody well did after Brexit. We're not doing that. We're better than that. Just fucking vote out. Like, I'm just saying, I've got a red dragon on, it appears. Just maybe use that as your guide.
I've launched a new channel for a one-off special, and we are doing Tories crying in a sports hall.
We're being very tight-lipped on where we fall on the political spectrum.
Actually, to be fair, I think anybody who listens to our podcast has probably gathered where we fall on the political.
Anyone who's ever
spectrum.
Talked to any of us will know what we think politically.
So from 9 o'clock tomorrow night, we're going to be live streaming. We're going to be drinking. We're going to be celebrating. Anyone who knows us who has our phone numbers, has us on Messenger, you're quite welcome to drop us a messenger. We'll send you a link. You can come join us on the
show.
Come
and join us on the feed. It doesn't have to be entirely political. If you just want to come on and have a chat
for half hour, because like, I think we're going to struggle to be political for the whole thing.
Yeah, we might
just start some bollocks, and
I think that's extremely likely.
For the first hour and a half, we might even do a watch along.
And what time are you starting tomorrow?
I've scheduled it for 9, which I thought was a sensible time.
And polls closing at 10.
Polls close at 10. We should have an exit poll out very, very quick after that.
Yeah.
So for me, I'm going to be working, as I say, from like you've got to get there at 6 in the morning for a 7 o'clock open to the polls. Won't get out there till 10:30 at night. So I will come on. I will definitely join you guys for a bit. I don't know how long, because I will be half asleep. But otherwise, I would love to have joined you all night, guys. But yeah, I look forward to joining
you. At some point, you will probably see us asleep in my front room and our airbeds in our sleeping bags.
It's going to be something of a crazy night, but we will share the link on the Retrek page. And if you want to come and join us tomorrow night during the election, we'll look forward to that.
We will.
But thanks for trekking with us this time, and we will see you next time on the Retrek.
Thank you. Goodbye.
LLP and drag off. Fight red.